Welcome to this episode of Just the Discs. My name is Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. This is a very, very, very special episode and one that I hope to repeat, you know, every year, as I do with my blog. Film discoveries are a big deal to me. So movies, usually the cutoff year is 2000. So if a movie's from prior to 2000, I try to keep track of that. And so with this particular show, we did something like this on Pure Cinema, but with this particular show, I'm highlighting discs that I have seen this year that are movies that I'm discovering for the first time. And I have a very, very special guest, somebody I've not had on the show before, but he's one of my favorite podcasters, and it's Patrick Bromley. He is editor-in-chief at F This Movie. He writes for Daily Dead. He is on their podcast, Corpse Club, which I highly recommend. You should check that out if you have a moment. Patrick, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan of this podcast and of Pure Cinema and of the Rupert Pupkin Speaks blog, so this is a genuine honor for me.
Well, it's an honor to have you. And you have been contributing lists for years, and this is our first time speaking on the Skype, so that's kind of cool for me because we've interacted via, well, I mean, you were on Pure Cinema via sort of a recording, but...
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But other than that, we've mostly just interacted online, and right. I've always respected you as a writer and as a film... I think of you, like, as a professional film critic type, and me, as Elric and I have said on Pure Cinema, we're much more enthusiasts than critics, and I have a lot of respect for critics because you guys... have to make the hard decisions, which is like, is this good or bad? And that's something I, for whatever purpose I have, choose not to focus on as much, especially the bad part. But yeah. It's just, you know, like I said, I respect a lot what you do.
I think over the years, I mean, I guess I would still sort of be considered a critic, but I think over the years I have gravitated much more towards enthusiast. And a lot of that has to do with stuff like your blog and even listening to Pure Cinema, because I enjoy so much listening to people just talk about the things that they love that has become way more sort of my MO now, as opposed to seeking out things and tearing them down or whatever. Not that I ever really did that, but even in terms of, hey, here's a new movie, is it worth your time or not? I get a lot more joy out of going back and watching older stuff and then talking about that. And honestly, I feel like a lot of that comes from just even following you on Twitter for so many years and just reading, like, oh my gosh, you are watching every different kind of movie, just always excited about it. It's just really super cool.
Well, that I am really touched to hear you say that. And I should say, I forgot to mention the F This Movie podcast, which has been on the air since 2010. When did you guys start?
2010. Yeah, 2010 we started.
So you guys have been at it a long time. And I said it on Twitter, but I'll say it here too. The Jackie Brown episode that you and Adam did is one of my favorite podcasts of 2017.
Just, oh, wow.
Just
thank
a
you.
Wonderful, delightful discussion of a movie that I adore and, you know, encapsulates everything that I sort of think about the movie and beyond, but also just that sort of spirit of, like, here's something we love and let's just break down why we love it. So hats off for that one. But definitely, well, folks, check out the F This Movie podcast if you haven't.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a really fun show to record. I'm sometimes intimidated to talk about stuff that I love completely because I don't want it to just turn into, we always joke about it being the Chris Farley show where we just name something and then say that was awesome.
Well, thankfully you guys are really good film talkers, so it doesn't ever really devolve to that. You know, there's just a lot going on. I do find that you're one of those people that I, and not to continue this back and forth, but just to say that, you know, you're one of those people that I listen to and I'm like, here's somebody who's thinking about films on another level and coming up with ideas and thematics and tying things together in a way that I find mentally very rewarding. So, you know, tip of the hat to that as well.
It's awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, let's get into this because I gave you quite a task, and then I gave you, we're going to do Pure Cinema style. We're going to do 5 picks each and maybe some honorable mentions. So this episode might run a touch longer than my normal show, but regardless, I just wanted to hear what some stuff that you came across on disc that you enjoyed, you know, movies wise happened this year for you. Start with your number 5. Let's hear what you got.
Sure. I tried to pick because I'd put together a list of discoveries for your blog. And then I was trying to pick maybe a few that were not on that list, just to give your listeners something more. I always like to talk about more movies instead of fewer. So I'm actually going to start with the first movie I watched in 2017. Ooh. On January 1st. It was a Twilight Time title that I had never seen before, called From Noon Till Three.
Oh.
Now, Charles Bronson.
Me.
And Jill Ireland.
Wowie yourself.
In From Noon Till Three. It's a love story too good to be true.
I hope that wasn't meant to be an insult.
Charles Bronson is Graham Dorsey, the outlaw.
Your name is now spoken in the same breath as Jesse James.
He saw what he wanted.
The first law of chivalry is to rescue ladies in distress.
And took it. Jill Ireland is Amanda Starbuck, the lady.
I'm not ashamed of anything I've done. Oh.
She knew what he needed.
If you're so depraved, you'd inflict your desires on an unwilling body. Then proceed.
And gave it. The whole world will remember the love they shared from noon till three.
Love isn't something you measure that way.
It's a romance.
I think I'm in love with you.
Me too.
It's a western.
Fill your hand, mister.
I already did.
It's a comedy. It's a tragedy.
Let nothing spoil our legend. Nothing.
It's full of suspense. And surprises.
You don't want me to disrobe.
It's an unusual movie starring an unusual Bronson.
Me.
From noon till three.
I have not seen this movie. I know of it. Go talk about it.
So it's based on a novel by Frank Gilroy, and then he adapted the script and directed the film. And it's Charles Bronson and Jill Ireland. I believe this was the movie that they met, and of course later married and, you know, stayed married for a long time. It's very weird because I grew up, I think, watching Charles Bronson's action movies, particularly like from the 80s. And so I always grew up with this idea of like, what is the big deal with Charles Bronson? Why do people like Charles Bronson? Because in a lot of those later canon movies, you know, Assassination and Death Wish 4, he seems kind of like openly miserable, you know, he's just not as into it. And so even when I would go back and watch some of his older titles, Once Upon a Time in the West or, you know, House of Wax or something like that, I was like, all right, I still don't get it. And in recent years, I've been checking out some more of like the more fringy Charles Bronson titles where he's really engaged. And man, I From Noon Till Three might be my favorite Charles Bronson performance because it's really light. It's almost a comedy. He plays a bandit. You know, he's with a group of robbers in the Old West who hold up something. I don't know. And he essentially hides out in Jill Ireland's house. It was a year ago that I watched it.
It's all good.
He hides out in Jill Ireland's house for a few hours, and not to spoil it, but they end up sleeping together. And then
I think it's on the cover of the disc, so I think you're good.
Right. So it becomes this almost folk tale. She writes a book about what happened, and it's just such an interesting movie because it goes in these directions that I wasn't expecting. It's such a different Charles Bronson performance, and I don't know if it's because, you know, he was genuinely in love with his leading lady that he's so much more engaged. But it is just delightful and surprising and so different from every other. It's such a warm Bronson performance, and that's hardly ever a word that I would use to describe Charles Bronson.
Wow.
So he's so engaged, and the two of them are so much fun together. And the movie, you know, a lot of times movies that are kind of based on novels don't follow the exact beats that a lot of other movies do. They have a chance to unfold in a different way, and this movie definitely feels like that. So it gets to a point where I just thought, wow, I genuinely don't know where this is going, and that's a really exciting feeling. So I'm thankful to, you know, Twilight Time. They put out some movies that I really love, but I feel like more times than not, they're putting out stuff that I have never seen and in some cases never heard of. And it's almost always something cool, you know, that I'm excited to have checked out.
Yeah, they're as we've said on the other show, and I've probably talked about it on this show, they're one of my favorites and they have been for years. And they, I mean, there are certainly some things they put out where I'm like, okay, sure. But then there's some stuff where it's legit like some of my favorite films of all time, and so there's clearly some simpatico that I have with them on some level. But I have not watched this movie yet, and to be honest, the cover and the fact that he was with Jill Ireland, I just made me think, I don't know, like this is going to be some kind of, you know, goofy sex comedy, and I don't think I want to. But you've totally sold me on it, you know. I think I bought it and just haven't watched it yet.
I think you will dig it, just based on knowing your taste from listening to your shows and stuff. I think you'll dig it.
I'm pretty sure you're right. Well, I'm going to go a completely different direction for my number five, which in the spirit of pure cinema, I've got a tie for my number five. So let me start with the, they're calling it Ed Wood's The Violent Years, but it's technically directed by somebody else. It's directed by a guy named William Morgan, but it's written by Ed Wood.
They're shooting back.
What'd you expect him to do, throw powder puffs?
Do what they say, Shirley. They've got guns.
Yes, Shirley, we've got guns. Come on, Satan, and I hate you. So what?
And this came out from AGFA. This just came out in December. So I just actually watched this, I want to say like 3 days ago. And I was excited about it when I saw the trailers. It looked very campy. It's like a girl gang movie. But it was way more entertaining than I thought, and actually had way more, I don't want to give it too much credit, but had more style to it than I expected. And that probably comes from it not being directed by Ed Wood. And not to bag on the guy's stylistic efforts, but that's not his forte. So there are camera movements. There's performances that are, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say, I just think it's a better movie than I expected it to be, and more entertaining in that way that a campy girl gang movie can be. It just feels like a very like proto John Waters, like Female Trouble kind of movie to me. Like I feel like I've heard him talk about Ed Wood at some point, but I can't remember if he referred to this movie specifically, but I can't imagine he's not a fan of it. I mean, the basic idea is that this girl is, she has some wealthy parents and they don't make enough time for her. So it's a very much a message movie, you know, like be better parents to your kids. In fact, there's at least two scenes of a judge, like just basically berating parents.
It now comes to light that both of you, over the past 18 years, have proven yourselves utterly incompetent in the most important responsibility given to a man and his wife. I refer to the bringing up children in your own home. In all fairness to the society which you so miserably failed, and in justice to this child, I must deny your request.
Which is always funny to me. But yeah, so she gets in with this rough crowd of girls, and they start knocking over gas stations and picking up dudes and throwing wild parties and tearing up the school. And so it just was way, way more entertaining than I expected it to be. It caught me off guard, and it's short too. I want to say it's just over an hour. So that, you know, that's pretty great when a movie zips along and is entertaining like that. But the AGFA transfer looks really nice, you know, considering I can't remember if it's a 16mm source print or 35, but it also comes with another movie on there that I started to watch and I wasn't quite as into, which seemed a little bit more dramatic and typical of the genre. Just a little dour, I don't know. But yeah, this was a lot of fun. So that's my number five, part A. And part B is a movie called The Gorgon from 1964.
It has been said that every legend and myth known to mankind is not entirely without some truth. It was here, under a full moon, in the little village of Van Dorf, that an ancient legend suddenly, terrifyingly came to life.
Doctor, you'll perform an autopsy.
On a body that's turned to stone?
Which is a Hammer movie directed by Terrence Fisher. This is part of the Indicator Hammer. It's the first Hammer set that they put out. And it's my favorite film in that set by far. Actually, one of the best Hammer horror movies I've seen in recent memory. It's got Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. It's about a sort of Medusa-like creature that terrorizes this small village and is turning people to stone, and there's some mystery surrounding that character, and, you know, Cushing plays the local doctor, and I don't know. It was just exactly the right amount of atmosphere and the right amount of entertainment value that I hope to get out of a Hammer horror film, which can be a little stodgy for me. I don't know. How do you feel about Hammer? What are your thoughts?
Hammer is less of a blind spot than it used to be for me, but for many years, it was like one of those areas of horror that I just didn't have enough of a depth of knowledge about. And yeah, they can sometimes be a little bit hit or miss for me. You know, there's a handful of Hammer films that I really, really love. And then there's a handful that I'm like, I always find them comforting. There's something about the look and the sound of them that I always like having them on, but I sometimes will forget them. I have seen The Gorgon, though, and it was really fun. Although I saw it, this one's also available as part of a double feature, right? From I think Mill Creek, maybe?
Yep, 100%.
They had put out a handful of them, and so that's how I saw it, because I picked that up for like $6 or $7. They're super cheap. And I'm guessing the transfer isn't as good as on the Indicator one, but it was certainly passable. But yeah, that was of the new Hammer films I watched this year. The Gorgon was my favorite.
That's cool. Well, I'm glad you saw it and enjoyed it. I think this disc also had something to do with it. It has a nice commentary track from some fellow podcasters, the ladies from the Daughters of Darkness podcast, Kat Ellinger and Sam Deegan. They've been doing a few for Indicator, and I feel like Arrow maybe. They're starting to get on that circuit on the UK stuff, and they are a great duo, and they actually enriched my enjoyment of the film on top of the nice transfer and whatnot. So that's another reason I liked it, I think. But anyway, number four for you, sir. Sorry.
No, my number four is a film that I blind bought during a Vinegar Syndrome halfway to Black Friday sale. I think they will put out a couple limited editions of some new titles. And they had two this year. One was Red Mob, which is a crazy Russian action movie. And the other is a film called Sweet Sugar.
Meet Sugar. She's beautiful. In chains, and she's busting out, shackled to the steamy cane fields of a tropical inferno. They're women, they're warm, they're wildcats.
Hey, black gal! You gonna get Mojo some of your stuff?
I don't mess around with bush bunnies.
Hung up, strung out. The searing sting of the whip burned a brand of hate into her heart.
Which is my number four. Again, I knew nothing about it. I bought it because I was like, well, it's Vinegar Syndrome and it's limited and it's not one of their porn titles, which I'm far less interested in.
Same.
Yeah, so I tend to skip those, but anything that isn't one of those, I will almost always try to pick up and give a chance to. And man, Sweet Sugar was such a pleasant surprise. Over at our website all month long in June, we do this thing called Junesploitation, which is we devote every day to exploitation movies, like a different category each day. And so this was a movie that I watched in a month where I probably watched, you know, 60 different exploitation movies. And this one stuck out above maybe every single other one.
Wow.
And it's essentially just a women in prison movie, but it put Phyllis Davis on my radar. And I didn't even realize that I had seen her in a handful of other movies like Beyond the Valley of the Dolls and Terminal Island which is a really cool movie. Yeah. But she gets the lead here and she is something else. It was like, oh, I want to watch her in every movie now. And there's just, I mean, it's just, a crazy movie where at one point there's a bunch of women trapped, you know, in a, it's essentially a jail cell, but they're behind a fence more or less. And the guards just start throwing cats over the fence at them and the cats are attacking them. And I thought, you know what? I've never seen that in a movie before. And I'm delighted to have finally seen it. So I think Vinegar Syndrome now is just putting out like a regular edition of the film. And I don't know what the differences are, except that it doesn't have a slip cover, which I'm, you know, I could kind of care less about.
Yeah.
So if you didn't get a chance to pick it up, anybody listening, and you want to check it out, I think it's well worth it.
Yeah, I can't agree more. In fact, I missed it when they sold the limited, and I ended up paying a pretty penny for it on eBay because I didn't realize they were going to do this, and I could give a crap about the slipcase too. But I have seen it, and I do like it a lot, and I totally see what you see in it, so that's why I shelled out, because I'm like, well, I like this movie a lot. It's a whole lot of fun.
Yeah.
One of the best of that genre, I think, for me. I can't think of too many I like more in terms of the women in prison stuff.
Yeah. No, it's really fun, and sometimes those movies tend to get... I mean, sometimes the sleaziness is part of the fun, but sometimes they're so ugly that it's like, I feel bad about enjoying this.
Yeah.
And Sweet Sugar didn't have as much of that. Like, I didn't need six showers afterwards. Maybe just two.
Just the two shower. Yeah. No, it's totally like, I feel the exact same way that you do about the genre in general. And thus, I'm sure there are some out there that I have yet to discover, but usually you can kind of eyeball it and watch a trailer and go, this one has a little more sadism than I would like.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay away, probably. So, yeah, this is definitely one of my favorites, and I'm 100% on board with you. And I do recommend, like you say, anybody that's interested in this kind of movie, grab that new unlimited or less limited.
Less
I don't know
limited.
Whatever it is. That's a good pick. Okay, so number four for me is a movie I had never heard of before, and this one came out from Kino Lorber Studio Classics, who quietly had a really interesting year just as on a level of volume. I mean, they just put out so much stuff. And, you know, I won't necessarily say that every transfer is impeccable, but certainly some of the masters look really nice. I thought this one looked pretty good, if I recall. But they've just put out so much stuff. There's no possible way to keep up with all of it. So some stuff can get lost in that sort of mix. So I wanted to point this one out. It's called The Scar. It's from 1948. It's also known as Hollow Triumph.
You ran around. Good times, girls. You were special. You never followed the rules. There were no rules for you. Would you believe it? I think I wanted to see you get away with it. You were everything I wasn't, everything I wanted to be, everything we all like to be. Only we know better.
Put the cash in the envelopes.
We know sooner or later it always catches up with you.
They'll get us. A guy likes chance. If those guys don't stop till they get eaten, believe me.
Get him. If it takes 20 years, get him.
Leave me alone, Freddy. Don't give me any lectures.
Where are you going to go? What are you going to do? Marcy tried Mexico. It didn't help.
Who are you? Who sent you?
Sent who? Me?
What are you following me for?
I thought I recognized you. You look exactly like him. Except, of course, for the scar. His name is Bartok.
Bartok. That's it. They won't find me.
I just talked to you on the phone. How'd you get here so fast?
You don't think it was easy to do you?
And it's this film noir drama that stars Paul Henreid, who is in Casablanca, and Joan Bennett, who I like a lot, who is kind of like a somewhere between like a Betty Davis and a Joan Crawfordy, and a little bit of like Lucille Ball for some reason. She reminds me of, I don't know why, but she's really good. And Henreid plays this guy who is like a con man who stole a bunch of money from the mob and is forced to impersonate a psychiatrist that looks like him. And I won't go too much further than that, but there's some surgery involved, and you know, some things turn slightly in a way that I didn't expect, but it plays real nicely in the sort of noir genre area. And are you a noir person? How do you feel about the genre in general?
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
I figured as much. But this one, I just like a movie like this where it's got two headliners that I know and like, and I'd never heard of it before, and it just got me in a good way. I think I saw this one pretty early in the year, and I just kind of hung on to it. So definitely, if Kino has another sale, which they've been having, I feel like they've had a couple, two, three this year, so maybe that's a trend. Check out The Scar if you can. That's my number four.
Yeah, I will for sure. I will for sure. Their sales get expensive for me because listening to your various podcasts is a costly habit, because every time you talk about movies, I'm like, ooh, I got to put that on the list. And so your Twilight Time episode for Pure Cinema almost broke me. Your Kino episodes on Just the Discs always lead me to large purchases during their sales. I mean, it's great because you can pick stuff up for, you know, $8 or something, but Yeah, I probably could have almost made a list of discoveries just from Kino Lorber, because as you said, they put so much stuff out, and so much of it is just stuff that was completely off my radar, just older catalog titles that, you know, aren't running on cable or whatever. And so I'm definitely putting that on the list.
Cool. What do you got for number three, sir?
Number three, in the interest of staying on a theme here, I'll pick another Kino title that I had just checked out, I think, on their last sale, and that is the 1972, I guess you'd call it a noir film as well, directed by Michael Ritchie, called Prime Cut.
Excellent.
Hiya, Ben, Nick. Been looking all over town for you.
Okay, how about yourself, Jack?
Got some trouble. Big trouble in Kansas City with Marianne. It's getting fat as a border rat. He owes us a lot, Nick. Close to a half a million. He's skimming his own cream and sticking Kansas right up my ass. I need you to straighten him out.
So what's the town?
$50,000. Any way it cuts.
Anyway?
Anyway.
Get yourself a bag, man.
No, Nick, it's bigger than that. I need you.
Well, Jake, I'm kind of taking my ease. Why don't you use your own boys?
I did, Nick. I sent Kelly down there. Sent McGuire down to look for him. He found him in 10 feet of cow flop. And we found McGuire floating down to Missouri. And then I sent down Murphy. Shaughnessy, bring that over here. Take a look at that, Nick. Go ahead, take a look. Brings back bad memories, Nick. Weenie and Marianne. The Pigsfoot brothers. They knocked down on everyone. And we knew them when.
Yeah, I think as soon as I finished watching this, I might have messaged you and said, like, have you guys talked about this before? Because this seems like a movie I would have heard about from you guys.
And it would have been talked about. We just haven't found a spot. Elric and I are both huge fans of it. It's great. I'm so glad you saw it and liked it. How would you try and encapsulate it?
I don't even know. I mean, I couldn't believe that this movie was not on my radar, because I was just scrolling through their sale titles and I see this movie. Oh, what's Prime Cut? Oh, it's got Lee Marvin and Gene Hackman and Sissy Spacek in her first movie. And I couldn't click add to cart fast enough. Mm-hmm. Gene Hackman is sort of a crime boss and
named Marianne, which I love.
Right. And Lee Marvin is going to take him down. And the making of sausage factors heavily into the film. I mean, the opening sequence alone, where you literally see how the sausage is made and then there's sort of a reveal about what's in the sausage. I was like, I am so on board for this movie. I was so into it. It's fun just to watch Gene Hackman play such a heavy. Lee Marvin is one of those guys, you know, that obviously I can just watch in anything. And it's just a great, tough, gritty, badass crime movie that, again, I just was so surprised was not on my radar. There's this amazing sequence at the end in a big cornfield. It's just such a cool movie that I'm so glad to have seen, and I'm so thankful for Kino, you know, for putting it out. And I was like almost kicking myself for not having seen it sooner.
No, I mean, that's a movie I feel like that it's a decently deep cut. It was on VHS and it was on DVD, but I don't feel like a lot of people were talking about it. I was just going to ask you on the Kino, on the Kino Marvin tip, have you seen Hell in the Pacific?
Not yet.
Okay. That's another one had I not already seen it, I would have, you know, put that on my list this year because it came out in a nice Blu-ray from them. I think you would like it. If you like Lee Marvin and Toshiro Mifune on an island, not saying much to each other, it's pretty interesting. Anyway, that just occurred to me when you said Lee Marvin, and I was thinking, oh, there's another Lee Marvin movie I like from Kino that they put out this year. What is it? Anyway, but yeah, Prime Cut, I don't know if it would quite move into Handshake territory for me, but it's really up there. It's definitely one I've had at least a couple different posters for it, because there's a couple really good. The one that I love is this great one of Gene Hackman like swinging a meat cleaver at at Lee Marvin. I'll send you a picture of it. I haven't been able to get that one yet, but I have like at least two others. So it's just one of those movies that's really special to me. And that last sequence you're talking about with the combines and the cornfield is, to me, cinematically in line with, you know, North by Northwest. I mean, it's memorable, you know?
That's exactly the movie that came to mind as I was watching it.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. I'm so glad you saw that one. Okay, so my number, what am I on, three? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, number three. This is a Twilight Time title. It's Our Man in Havana from 1959.
This is a top secret item. A map locating undercover activities. For each little pin here, there is one little spy. There, for example, our man in Jakarta, our man in Vienna, our man in Tokyo, and our man in Moscow. But the most unusual agent of them all was our man in Havana, a very likable chap in a most unlikely situation.
Frankly, when they asked me to be their man in Havana, I had no idea of how a spy spies. But I had reasons for being willing to learn, and they were anxious to teach me. That man is one of my instructors, a diabolical expert at the cloak and dagger game.
My name's Hawthorne. You will come to know me better as 59200. I'm in charge of the Caribbean Network.
It sounds like the Secret Service.
Look out, someone's coming. Slip into a cabinet. We mustn't be seen together.
But we have been seen together.
Don't argue, old man. I know the ropes.
Starring Alec Guinness, forced by accidents and design to become our man in Havana.
This one was directed by Carol Reed, who, of course, did The Third Man, among other things, Odd Man Out, The Fallen Idol, stuff I'm a fan of. But this one I'd never seen, and I would put it slightly more in line with like the British Ealing comedies that Alec Guinness did, The Man in the White Suit and Lady Killers and stuff like that. Although, tonally, it's sort of got some comedy and then some more serious stuff to it. The supporting cast includes Burl Ives, Maureen O'Hara, Ralph Richardson, Noel Coward, Ernie Kovacs. It's based on a novel by Graham Greene. Basically, the idea is that Alec Guinness plays a vacuum salesman named James Wormold, and he sells vacuum cleaners in pre-Revolutionary War Cuba. And this British Secret Intelligence Service guy, played by Noel Coward, I think, finds him and wants to make him like an operative for them in Cuba. And, you know, so he's just some, you know, not schlubby dude, but a guy who's fairly anonymous and is really intrigued by the idea of being a spy. And so he says, yeah, sure, I'd love to do that. And then, you know, part of his duties are to recruit other people, which he's not particularly good at. He attempts it a few times. He has some really awkward conversations in men's bathrooms that don't go very well. And then he ends up just kind of making up, you know, some of the people, some of his agents. And he's so good at it that they, you know, send him some help. They send him a secretary, played by Maureen O'Hara, and he just gets in way over his head, basically. And he just is getting further and further off the reservation as far as the truth. You know, like he's coming up with like these whole fake plans and things that he's getting. And it's so it gets really kind of crazy. And it's mostly comedic, but it does, like I said, it has some moments of heavier intrigue that I like too. But it's really, I don't know, if you haven't seen a lot of early Alec Guinness, he's no slouch, and he's really kind of good at this sort of smaller, everyday man kind of role. So, I don't know, I'd been meaning to see this one for a really long time, and I also really like Burl Ives as an actor. I like him as a singer, too, but I'm trying to think what character, if he'd be like the Sydney Greenstreet of the movie or something, but he's not quite that. But he's definitely a sort of a second fiddle character, and he's very good. I don't know, but anyway, very entertaining and interesting little entry for Alec Guinness that came from Twilight Time. Good stuff, for sure.
That's another one that I have to add to the list now, so you just keep costing me money.
there may be other ways to see it. I can talk to you about it a little later. Anyway, so what do you got for number two? We're on number two.
My number two, I feel bad because I do watch all kinds of movies, but I feel like all the ones that I'm excited to talk about on the show are all kind of more of the like genre movie exploitation varieties. Oh, so
I love that stuff.
Yeah. So my number two is Texas Detour.
Some people said I'm crazy, some said not to be a star. Well, I don't care just what they say, cause I know what's in my heart. All my friends said I'm reaching for the sky. I'm gonna try. Ooh, wanna give it a try.
Oh, wow, number two. Okay, I got to watch copy of Texas Detour.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to choose something from Code Red, which you guys have always been great about highlighting and even had Bill on your show.
yes, and it was. That was a memorable sit-down, I will tell you, in person. That was something
else. Yeah. But that was a terrific episode, and I'm just a huge sort of Code Red acolyte, you know, when I can figure out a way to buy their discs.
Well, I was going to say, I'm glad you're bringing this up, because I don't bring them up a lot on Just the Discs, because I mostly buy their stuff myself, and I just have too much other stuff to cover. But I'm with you. I'm fairly addicted, and I have a very significant shelf of many, many, many Code Red discs. So I feel your pain on this one big time.
I'm far enough into my Code Red collection that I'm like, there are probably fewer than 20 that I need still to finish it out.
Wow.
So now it's become like, oh, now I have to track these down. Yeah. Like, now I need to just own all of them and just give in completely. So it was a matter of, because a lot of my discoveries this year, I would say, came from Code Red, because they just put out these insane movies that in many cases I've never heard of, but I'm always willing to check them out. And so there were a bunch of Code Red titles I could have picked. I went with Texas Detour, which I only picked up because I think maybe Diabolik DVD was running a special where they were selling a bundle of like 5 discs for pretty cheap, and all of the discs were double features. And so Texas Detour is on a double feature with a movie called, I think, Cuba Crossing, that it was not really my bag. But Texas Detour is just like such a fun late 70s kind of Hicksploitation drive-in movie. Patrick Wayne, John Wayne's son, is kind of a, you know, generic white dude whose van breaks down. He's got, I think, his brother and sister with him, and their van breaks down in this little Texas town. And so they're stuck there for a few days, and he ends up falling in love with Priscilla Barnes, who is amazing in the movie. And
Three's Company's Priscilla Barnes.
Yes, and was a very early childhood crush for me.
Same.
And had I seen Texas Detour as a kid, it would have made my head explode. So Cameron Mitchell is her dad, who's sort of the wealthy, the richest man in town, and he's always playing a great prick, and R.G. Armstrong is the sheriff, and things go south because Priscilla Barnes's brother is kind of a scumbag, and he's pushing around Patrick Wayne, and so things go kind of south, and some people in town end up after him. It's just really, really fun. The transfer looks great. I mean, it's really just colorful and bright, and I just had a blast with it. So that's my number two.
That is really cool. I will admit to having started it, and I didn't finish it, not because I wasn't liking it, but I was focused on my Carvember, where I was trying to do car movies, and I thought it was just, for me, it was like taking too long to get to the car stuff. Like, the van broke down, and I was like, okay, well, they're not really driving now. They're just kind of hanging out, which is cool, but I was just like, oh, well, I got other car movies I got to watch this month, and so I never got back to it, but I think you recommended it to me. Did you, maybe?
I think so, yeah. Because when I saw it, I thought, oh, this is right up your alley.
Totally, and I got to get back to it now, because I like Patrick Wayne, actually. I mean, like, is... I don't want to get too carried away with that, but he's not his dad, but he's interesting. Those sort of like sons of actors, like, I don't know, there's something fascinating about that whole thing. You know, you're just like, how much talent is genetic and how much is not, and how much is total nepotism, and I don't know. Anyway, I'm glad I picked it up, and I'm definitely going to come back to it, because I do love Priscilla Barnes for sure. All right, well, my next one is, my number two is another Twilight Time title. It's called Captain from Castile.
In a tradition of excellence, 20th Century Fox brings you the greatest motion picture that has ever borne its trademark. The most romantic and spectacular adventure the screen has ever shown stars Tyrone Power as the Captain from Castile.
Did I trust you?
I swear it, before God.
No, not before God, De Silva. Perhaps if you renounced your faith in God, I'd believe you. You've defiled everything that the church stands for.
And this land holds out to us a glorious prize, but it must be won. Great things were never achieved without exertion. We are few in numbers, but strong in resolution.
And this is a Tyrone Power movie. And Tyrone Power, to me, is a little bit like Gary Cooper in that There's a certain earnestness to his performances that, at least at first, I was put off by as a stiffness, you know, as this whole other style of acting. And that's part of it, too. It's a different style. But I was just like, yeah, I don't know about this guy. And he was sort of that matinee idol type. At least that was my perception of him. And then I saw him in Nightmare Alley, which I think I did talk about in Pure Cinema, which is one of my favorite noirs and a really dark movie, but a really great performance from him. And based on that, I'd sort of given him a little more cred. And then I saw a movie called Abandoned Ship, which is one of my favorite sinking boat movies, or basically the aftermath of a sinking boat. And he's really good in that. But then I saw, you know, he did a lot of studio titles, a lot of things that I was just like, that just doesn't look like my thing. And this was one of those that I was like, I don't know. But this is it's set initially in Spain in 1518, and he plays, basically it has to do with sort of Spain and then, you know, the conquistadors coming over to, I believe, the States, and that's that whole sort of adventure, if you will. But there's also the sense of, like, the Spanish Inquisition is sort of a factor, so there's religious stuff in it. But it's just a really rousing sort of adventure movie, ultimately. And there is a really great supporting role for Lee J. Cobb, who is another actor that I really like a lot, and who almost always plays heavies, and really good heavies, like heavies that you want to physically hurt when you see them, because he's just so good. But he plays less of a heavy in this one. He plays a little bit more of a supporting role, and that is a really interesting thing in and of itself. But yeah, I don't know. There's something about the adventure of this one. Cortez is played by Cesar Romero, and when Tyrone Power and Lee J. Cobb and another person sign up for the expedition to Mexico with Cortez, it gets really interesting. I'd be very curious to hear your take, because the ending it's troubling. It's very troubling. But by the time I get to that point in the movie, I'm so on board with everything they're doing. And not to spoil too much, but obviously they're going into Mexico. There's a certain amount of, like, conquering, you know, happening. So right. It ends in a way that's sort of like, yeah, let's go off and conquer. And sort of the implications and ramifications of what that means, at least now, is tricky for me, because I'm just like, well, wait a minute. Who are you going to go kill? What's right. happening? You know, and but I like you guys. So anyway, the ending is a very interesting thing ultimately, but the movie in and of itself just had this wonderful adventure quality to it. Not quite Swashbuckler. I'm a big fan of that type of thing as well. But yeah, I don't know. Power, just, he's really charismatic, and he really sells it. He has a certain ability to sell loyal characters. That I like. There's something about that. It's not overly sentimental. I feel like there's certain actors that can't pull off that kind of loyalty without it being, you know, like, nearly tear-jerking inducing, or attempting to be that. So he does it in this other way that is kind of naivete leading into a drive to do things. I don't know. I'm circling around trying to explain Tyrone Power, and I can't really do it. But regardless, this movie really surprised me. It was just one where I was like, oh, I don't know about this one. But it's sort of the Twilight Time thing, like you were saying. Like, they just pick out these movies that I feel like the ones I haven't heard of, I think I probably need to give a little more opportunity to, because I can have a big surprise like this. This is my number two Blu-ray discovery of the year, so I'm glad I checked it out.
Yeah, they rarely pick duds, and this is another one that I haven't seen, but you totally sold me on it, honestly, just even by listing who's in it, because I feel like, you know, when I first really got into movies as a kid, it was usually based on, oh, that, you know, TV commercial looks cool, or this sounds like it's about something I want to see. And then I went through years where it was more about who directed it. And now I feel like it's, you know, which character actors show up in it, because I'll just watch it if there's, you know, these people in it that I want to see. And so as you were listing the cast, I was like, well, how can I not see this movie? And I'm kind of with you on both Gary Cooper and Tyrone Power. I don't think I've quite crossed the threshold yet, especially with Gary Cooper, where I'm like, all right.
No, I'm with you. I understand.
Like, I always want to. There's certain movies where I'm like, I would like this more if it wasn't Gary Cooper.
That's fair. No, that's totally fair. I just want to ask real quick, how many of his comedies have you seen? A lot of them?
Gary Cooper?
Yeah.
A handful. Okay. I mean, and I think honestly, one of them was on my list for your site, which was Designed for Living.
That's right.
right. this year.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, that's one. I think it's the comedies that ultimately got me to sort of come around to him, because I came to him, as a lot of people did, through High Noon, and I was just like, and I still don't know how I feel about High Noon, honestly. I like it, but I'm a little iffy on it. But yeah, I'm with you. The comedies, like, I would say Design for Living is great. He's really so good in it with Fred March. But there's one called Bluebeard's Eighth Wife. I think that's a Lubitsch movie, which he's really good in. And I don't want to say there's one more comedy that I'm... Oh, Ball of Fire.
Ball of Fire. Yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah. But yeah, those are the ones that got me around to him. But I totally get your hesitancy. And he's not... And I would never say he's one of my favorite actors, but I've totally come to kind of get it, to kind of understand what it was about him that, you know, made him one of the biggest stars at the time, you know. Yeah. He fascinates me, though. I'm with you. It's a weird thing, his what he projects, you know. I just can't even really describe it.
And I was super excited. You had mentioned Nightmare Alley, and I was super excited when you had talked about that on the other show, because that was the movie that inspired Toby Hooper to make The Funhouse. And that's one of my favorite horror movies, and Toby Hooper is my favorite director, so I will always have affection for Nightmare Alley. Besides it being a cool movie, it also led to this other thing that I love, and I just love how those connections can be made, you know, the more you kind of dig into the history of these movies.
That's so cool. I did not know that, and now I totally see it and I get it.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of The Funhouse, personally. I think that's one of my more favorite of his films, although it seems slightly divisive. Some people seem to love it, some don't. I don't know, but in his canon, that's one of my favorites, personally.
Yeah. So we're at my number one here?
Number one.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I feel bad because I don't think this is going to be terribly surprising, because I feel like this was a favorite discovery of a lot of people, and I'm pretty sure it came up on your last Pure Cinema. But this is Severin's release of The Devil's Honey.
Everything I love is in you. I need you. I need all of you.
No, because you don't want me. You want a piece of me.
It did not really come up, actually, just briefly. Okay. So that's okay. Awesome. Let's talk about it. I have not watched my copy yet. I've heard a good deal about the saxophone. I know what to expect in the opening. I mean, I'm sure seeing it will actually blow my mind, but I know what it is at the beginning.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like if you get, you know, the slipcover, again, who cares about the slipcover, but the first however many that Severin sold came with this slipcover that essentially tells you what the opening of the movie is. And it's a crazy image. And I knew nothing about the movie. I'd never even heard of it.
Nor had I, by the way.
Yeah, it was one of those where I'm like, what? Fulci made this movie about this? And so I'm just a huge Fulci fan. And so I was excited to check out one of his films that I had not seen before. And the movie did not disappoint. It is crazy. I mean, those opening moments are... It's so weird because I had such a... It took me a long time to come around on Fulci. I just was like, I don't know. I don't get it, you know? And honestly, the movie that made it click for me, which is crazy, is The New York Ripper.
Holy shit, that's funny.
Which is, right, like kind of a repellent, unbelievably sleazy movie, but I
like it.
Oh,
I don't know what it is about that
I
movie.
Do too, right. We're terrible people because I'm like, exactly. I am into this.
And I think I watched that with my wife, and I think we had a good time, regardless of its sleaze.
Oh my gosh. And for some reason, that was the movie where it all clicked. And I was like, oh, I get what he is and who he is. And I was just having a great time with that movie. And I feel like The Devil's Honey is sort of Fulci in New York Ripper mode. It's way less violent. You know, there's none of that ugliness. But just in terms of like the crazy sexuality and what his idea of sexuality is. Again, you know, the movie is sort of famously his come back after being sick for a long time, and he came back and made this movie, and it opens in a crazy way with the saxophone, but then it honestly goes to a place where it's sort of a psychological drama, sort of almost like this version of Oleana, where it's like I'm the only person to ever say this, by the way.
Wow.
It's this tug of war sort of between this man and this woman, a doctor who a woman blames for a tragic event in her life. And so they have this crazy relationship dynamic. And I don't know, man. I was like, the craziness of the opening obviously sold me, and I was like, well, I'll see where this goes, because Fulci's a lunatic. But then it turned into a movie that I actually think is really good and really interesting and sort of way more character-based than most of Fulci's movies. You know, so many of his movies are about mood and shock value, and this isn't. It's sort of about who these people are and the dynamic between them and where that goes. And it's exploring sexuality in much more of a psychological way than he ever has. You know, when you think about scenes in The New York Ripper, it's like, have you ever met a woman? but in this movie, which isn't to say that like this movie understands women at all, but at least he's trying to explore ideas about sex and sort of what drives some of these urges and some of the dynamics between men and women. So it starts as this outrageous movie, but by the end I was like, no, that was actually like a really good movie. And the transfer is amazing, and I'm just so thankful to Severin for sort of rediscovering this movie, because I feel like so many people saw it for the first time this year thanks to that Blu-ray. And I really, really liked it.
That's cool. I'm looking forward. I'm kind of saving it. I just got a sense that like a lot of people were going to talk about it, you know, this year and last year. And so I'm like, I'm just going to keep that one in the pocket for when I want a crazy movie. I know it won't disappoint. Yeah, I mean, part of the reason I even started doing Just the Discs, I mean, it was A, because I had come off of my old show Off the Shelf, and I was like, I want to do something about Blu-rays. But part of it is that there's just so much stuff coming out from all these different labels, and we're not even touching on major labels. I don't think any of us have a major label movie in our lists. So, I mean, these are labels that are known certainly to collectors, and I guess my show is ultimately for collectors, but
yeah.
I just felt like I got to do something about all these different labels that are putting out interesting stuff, whether it be from some, you know, sort of obscure film noir to a Lucio Fulci movie that even the biggest Fulci fans I've not heard really talk about. There needs to be a place to discuss that stuff and at least give credit to these folks that are doing some really neat work and digging up some real gems. So it's kind of a golden era right now, and I don't know how long it'll last, but I'm going to ride it out regardless.
For sure.
But that's just the range of stuff on our list gives some indication as to the amount of great movies that are still out there that aren't available on Blu-ray. And I think Blu-ray and streaming are the keys to people getting off their butts and watching some of this stuff that's not being talked about as much. So just in terms of honorable mentions, do you have a few you want to talk about before we close out?
Sure. Did you do your number one yet?
Oh, you know what? I should probably do my number one. What a great podcaster I am. Totally off my game. So my number one... Well, you know what? Here's why it was less of a deal. Like, I've talked about my number one on the Twilight Time episode of Pure Cinema. It's Support Your Local Sheriff from 1969.
The people of the town of Elephant's Breath, Montana, did not support their local sheriff. And this is what happened. The residents of Sagging Bag, Arizona, did not support their local sheriff. And Wemo. And now the town of Callander, Colorado is facing the same fate. Because Callander is a wide open town where men fight in the streets and women litter. And there's a terrible traffic problem, a gun control problem, and no morals at all.
You want to grab something?
Everything looks too slippery.
What does that mean?
That's not the question. The question is, will Callander support their local sheriff? His name is Jason McCullough, and he alone holds the answers to Callander's problems. The rock. Or the rope. Or, when everything else fails, the finger.
He stuck his finger in the end of your what?
All Jason needs is the town's support and the love of a good woman. Never has the West been wilder?
Hold it! Hold it! Just set it down out there! Just hold it! Okay, go ahead!
James Garner. Joan Hackett. Walter Brennan. Harry Morgan. Jack Elam.
Wow.
Support your local sheriff.
Another Twilight Time release. They really had a great showing in my list here. And I'll reiterate kind of what I said on that episode, although I do recommend you go check out the Twilight Time episode of Pure Cinema. It's one of my favorites that we did all year. And, I mean, the gist is that James Garner plays like this sort of saucy drifter type who wanders into a lawless town that's in the midst of like a gold rush type thing. And he ends up taking the job as sheriff in this town. And the town is lawless in part because there's a family of evil type dudes played by Bruce Dern and Gene Evans and Walter Brennan. And they kind of rule the town, and they are responsible for either, I think, killing and definitely running sheriffs out of town. And it's just really hilarious and fun to see how James Garner goes sort of toe-to-toe against them, because he is a con man, and he cons his way into the sheriff job, but he's also like a really good he's really good with the iron, as they say. He is quite a master with the six gun, so he can kind of back it up, and I always love characters like that. You know, smart-ass characters that can back it up, especially when played by James Garner, are incredibly entertaining. And the fact that Jack Elam plays his deputy is just fantastic, because Jack Elam is one of my favorite faces in the entirety of cinema as we know it. He is just so craggy and so memorable, and I got to know him through a few Disney movies, stuff like Hot Lead and Cold Feet and Never a Dull Moment. He was a Disney guy, but he was also a Western guy. He looks like a character out of the Old West. He looks like a guy who literally just rode in off the stage of any stage in any movie, because he's just such a character. But he's really funny in it too, which is great, because he's just kind of like, what the hell are we doing? You know, like, we're going to be killed. And these people are, he's like kind of a coward, but, you know, he starts to help out and sort of join forces by the end of the movie. So anyway, it's just really fun to see this kind of con man movie play out. And I also just love Bruce Dern a lot. I was just watching a movie called Number One tonight, which is a football movie with Charlton Heston, where he plays like the quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, and he's like an aging quarterback. And Bruce Dern plays an ex, like, he used to play on the Saints. I think he was a tight end, but he retired, and he's now leasing cars, and he's trying to sell Heston on like, come over to this side, and I'll give you a job leasing cars. And it's just very funny to see him in anything. But he's really good as a heavy. You know, he's amazing in The Driver. He's amazing in so many movies. But anyway, he's really good in Support Your Local Sheriff, and he's a very enjoyable foil while not being that sharp, which I think is an interesting thing to be able to pull off, you know, without it turning into just buffoonery, you know? So I think he brings a little extra something to the bad guy role, but it's still very funny. So I don't know. I just was absolutely delighted by this movie, and it's ridiculous that I hadn't seen it until the Twilight Time Blu-ray. So that's my number one. We can go into honorable mentions now.
I haven't watched it yet, but that's one of the titles that I picked up after your Twilight Time episode. I think there were three or four other titles that I know I picked up. Emperor of the North, I watched and loved. Eureka, something else too. But so I have Support Your Local Sheriff, and I haven't spun it yet, but I'm definitely going to.
I mean, it's directed by Burt Kennedy, as I mentioned in the show before on Pure Cinema, who wrote a bunch of stuff for Bud Bedeker, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Bud Bedeker Western. westerns, but those are some of my favorite westerns. And this is much funnier than those traditionally are. But Burt Kennedy is just like one of those guys who I feel like was sort of put on this earth to make westerns. He's just one of those guys. He just makes interesting westerns, whether it be from the writing side or from the directing side in this case. Some of the stuff he has his hands in are some of my favorites. And this is no exception. So anyway, honorable mentions if you have a few.
Yeah, sure. I'll try to rattle through them pretty quickly. I have two Twilight Time titles. One is You'll Never Get Rich, the musical with Fred Astaire and Rita Hayworth what I believe is her first leading role.
I think you're right.
It's too good to be true.
It's not only true, it's magnificent, breathtaking, and hilariously funny. Columbia's exciting new musical milestone, You'll Never Get Rich.
And it's delightful. And also Inserts, which is a movie that I had never heard of until your Movies About Movies episode, I think.
Oh, smart guy, huh? Well, how come if you're so smart, you never leave this house, huh?
That's what you call your basic rhetorical question, Rex. Now off with the shorts.
Oh, anything you say. You're the boy wonder. But I'm going to tell Big Mac about this. He knows a hot one when he sees it. Big Mac will go bananas for this stunt, believe me.
Really? Well, speaking of stunted bananas, you want to slap some life into that thing, Rex? You know, time is money. The sun's going behind the clouds. We lose the kid in half an hour. Come on, Rex, let's go.
Did I talk about it on that one?
I think so. Okay. I know you guys that put it on my radar.
That's cool.
And man, that movie kind of blew me away. And Jessica Harper is so good in that movie.
Oh, yeah. She is. I mean, that just is one in the chain of movies that she made that makes her the star that she, the very specific favorite actress she is to me. I mean, because you go from Suspiria to Phantom of the Paradise. I mean, well, you go from Phantom to Suspiria to Stardust Memories. Well, actually, you go to that movie first. I think she did Inserts before she did Stardust. But those four movies alone, and then Shock Treatment. I mean, she's just done so much interesting stuff that I just, I adore her. So that's a really cool pick, man. Yeah, that movie is, it's bizarre to see Richard Dreyfuss in that kind of role. He didn't do a lot of those. But I'm sorry.
Yeah, so that was a great one. One Arrow title, which is Wolf Guy, the Sonny Chiba.
I gotta see this.
Oh my God. It's, again, one of these movies where you just have no grasp on what genre it is, where it's going, and it's so entertaining and it's so much fun. Part horror, part action movie, part kung fu movie. It's terrific. One more Code Red title, Truck Stop Women.
Oh, I love it.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. The great Claudia Jennings. Oh, and so every time I watch a new Mark Lester movie, I think, why isn't Mark Lester more beloved? You know, there are certain titles that people talk about a lot. Class of 1984 or Commando, you know.
Commando is what I was thinking of.
Yeah. But man, he has made a lot of cool movies. So and I think all the rest of mine are Kino titles. Making Contact, the Roland. Have you seen that movie?
I haven't watched it yet. That's so interesting.
Oh, my God.
Growing up can be hell, especially when you're different.
Roland Emmerich, just, it's like Martians saw E.T. and thought, we could do that, and it is bananas, but it is so fun.
I bought it. I have it, so I can definitely check it out, and I will based on that.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. Certain Fury.
Academy Award winner, Tatum O'Neill.
I know we can beat this.
Academy Award winner, Irene Cara.
I didn't resist arrest.
And Peter Fonda.
Would you help me if I had stiffed a cop?
I didn't stiff a cop!
Oh, that's a cool one.
Tatum O'Neill, Irene Cara team up. No one knew they wanted, but you totally do.
Dude, that courtroom scene, I just don't think I've seen a courtroom scene quite like that. That turns into a bloody shootout the way that does.
I was expecting the movie to be a little bit tamer. And so when it got as bloody as it did, I was like, oh, this is not the movie I was expecting. And I was on board for it.
Wow, that's a cool choice, man. Good call.
The Unholy Four, which is a great old spaghetti western.
Did not see this one.
It's good. It's really fun. Scavenger Hunt.
Hello.
Welcome to the gym.
Thank you.
My name is Motley.
I am Lars. I'm the instructor here.
Yes, yes, healthy.
Thank you.
I tell you, I have a little problem.
What? That's what we're here for.
We take care of problems. Uh-huh. Yes, and you have a problem. How did you get that? We take care of your back. We straighten you out all the way. That's we make you come out of this gymnasium as a healthy young man.
Some medicine, Paul.
No medicine. We don't deal with medicine here. We deal with absolute just nutrition, food supplements, drugs.
Hey, no, I don't believe in drugs.
With America. Drugs. We make a real man out of you.
I think is another one that after I watched it, I was like, this seems like a Brian Sauer movie.
Yeah, I talked about that one on the Ripoffs episode with Steve Scarlatta. Yeah, that's so fun that you, it's one that I'm almost a little ashamed to champion as much as I do, but it's so weird because every time I watch it, I'm just like, this movie is, I don't want to say garbage, but it's not a good movie. It's so broad and clunky and the jokes don't land and it's way too long. But there's something about the cast and the sort of jovial nature of everybody just running around grabbing stuff. And I don't know what it is about it. I just love it.
Yeah. The cast is so much fun. I mean, it's just a chance to spend time in the company of all these actors that you love, you know. And wait, I had one more. Oh, a film that I learned about, I think, on your Death Wish episode of Pure Cinema. And that is Defiance.
Oh, sweet.
They all lived in fear. All but one.
Hey, tough guy. Before your girlfriends can cross the street, I'm going to bend this six-pack around your head. But don't mess with me, punk.
Yeah, that was one that I picked up after hearing that, because, again, it was not on my radar. And I'm not the world's biggest Jan Michael Vincent fan, although he could certainly be cool in the right movies, you know, but it's just, it's hard to disassociate, like, what he eventually kind of turned into. And so sometimes I watch some of his older titles, and I'm like, this just makes me sad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was another movie that just, I love the kind of gritty city feel of it. I didn't know where it was going. And so, you know, when he and Danny Aiello start getting along, I was like, well, I didn't expect this at all because Danny Aiello seemed like, you know, another antagonist.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the idea that Danny Aiello thing is what really puts it up another notch for me in terms of, like, if you told me, oh, yeah, there's this movie with Jan Michael Vincent and Danny Aiello, I'd be like, what? I don't see a universe where those two, like, I didn't even realize they were acting in their prime. Well, not in his prime, but that they were in movies together. Like, they could have conceivably been in. But Aiello has obviously been doing it for a long time. So it just felt like something I didn't expect to happen. And that made a big difference, I think, for me.
Yeah, that movie was really fun.
That's cool. All right, so I've got a few here. The Moderns, Alan Rudolph's film, The Moderns, that Shout Select. About some expats in Paris in the 1930s. What's his name? Keith Carradine plays an artist who does his own stuff, but he also does some forgeries, and it's kind of a roundabout narrative, but it's also got a really great second fiddle performance from Wallace Shawn, who plays like a, I don't know if he's like a gossip columnist or an art critic or something, that he's got some reputation, and they sort of walk around talking to each other, and I just like Wallace Shawn walking around and talking. I just like Wallace Shawn in general.
This whole experience gives me a great idea for a movie I could write. And it would be perfect for Von Stroheim. You know, you can get a very good meal on this train. And they actually have an excellent wine list. This is going to be the best thing that ever happened to you.
Yeah, to hell with it.
So anyway, that helps that one. T-Men... film noir that came out from Classic Flicks.
Let's find two agents. Ability to pass as mobsters.
All I gotta do now is find a guy called Eskimo who's about 50, fat, smokes strong cigars, chews Chinese dragon liver herb medicine, has a scar on his shoulder maybe.
Who came out of kind of nowhere to now sort of establish an interesting brand of really nice looking restorations of older films. They've done several. There's another one. This is an Anthony Mann noir. And there is a couple more. I think Raw Deal is coming soon. And I feel like I've seen He Walked by Night. And they all look good. And they have decent extras. So it's just yet another label coming out of the woodwork to provide us with more good stuff. But I think it's another one where I don't think I'd ever watched it. I remember T-Man and Raw Deal coming out on DVD, and there was a big to-do about it because John Alton, the cinematographer, is like one of the greats, like James Wong Howe and stuff. And I was like, I don't know who John Alton is. And so then I remember I watched one, I think it was Raw Deal, and liked it, but I don't think I ever got to T-Man because it didn't ring a bell for me. But It's very procedural. It's got that sort of Dragnet voiceover thing happening in parts, which is I'm oddly not totally pushed out of a movie by. I don't know why. But then it does go into some nice twists and turns at the end that I liked. And it looks great. There's some amazing noir shots, amazing cinematography in the movie. So that's one. I kind of liked The Zero Boys from Arrow.
The Zero Boys, a winning team of survival game champions, ready for a weekend of fun in the wilderness of Southern California. Then all of a sudden, the game is no longer a game. The hunters become the prey. The blood is no longer paint. Strange things start to happen. And then friends drop. Dead.
Which I'm sure you saw this, and I'm not sure you've liked it or not, but it didn't quite go there enough for me ultimately. Like, I really wanted it to be more of a horror movie or more of something, but it was interesting. I have to say, so might be worth a look. Did you hate it, or how did you feel about it?
No, I think I'm in exactly the same place. Like, I thought it was super entertaining and was way on board for it for about 2/3, and then like you, I felt like, oh, this doesn't quite go as crazy as I wanted it to, given the director, right? Because isn't he the same? I know he's a Greek filmmaker who also made Island of Death, right?
Yeah, Island of Death, Hired to Kill. Arrow has put out a bunch of his stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I guess I just wanted that little push over the finish line, that little, you know, bit of what the fuck craziness that the movie didn't quite. But I do like it. And I know that one of my favorite programmers at the New Beverly is a big fan of it and had actually given it to me for my birthday. I want to say, like, boy, this must be like 7-8 years ago, on VHS. And wow. My VHS wasn't hooked up at the time, and I was always like, oh, I really got to watch that tape. And then it got announced on Blu-ray. I'm like, well, I'm picking that up. I clearly got to see that. And yeah, so it was just years of having built it up in my head, and on top of it not quite finishing as strong as I would have hoped, that left it out of my list proper. But it's an interesting movie, though. I really think, you know, Kelly Maroney alone is charming enough for me to be into it. But so the next one is Effects, which came out from AGFA.
Okay, let's see a movie.
Nobody is going to believe a spurt of blood.
They'll believe anything we show them.
She's pretty good with that razor, huh? You ought to put her in the movie.
Well, I still don't know what to do when he comes in.
No, you're fine. You're stoned. You're confused. Besides, everything's happening too fast for you to even be scared.
It's trash. Killing somebody on film? It's sick.
Yeah.
And did you see this one?
I did, yeah.
What did you think of it?
It's fascinating.
Right?
Like, even if I wasn't totally into the narrative at all times, I just loved it as sort of this historical document of this group of people making movies together around this time.
Yeah, I mean, because it's the George Romero troupe. It's a lot of the folks that would be involved with his productions. And he's in the extras, I feel like. There's some interview that they did with him, like as a reunion thing. I can't remember if he's a producer or how he was involved. I don't think he produced, but Tom Savini's in it. It's basically about a group of people making a low-budget horror movie, but there's all this meta stuff happening in it that's, it's really bizarre. It's just one of those movies that you kind of left a little perplexed by, but ultimately I just like where it was trying to go.
Yeah.
Similar to Zero Boys, but I feel like it delivered a little bit more than that movie did. And Tom Savini, I don't know why, but I'd like to see him. He almost always plays dicks, and he plays a dick in this movie, and he's pretty entertaining. I don't know. But it does go to places I didn't totally expect and ends in an odd way that I found interesting. And so definitely AGFA is putting out some intriguing stuff. They're another presence on the boutique label group that I'm always curious about, you know, when they announce stuff. And then a couple more, they're playing with fire.
On a campus with plenty of available girls, all willing to learn, what more could a college student want?
Come on, I'll show you.
It's the kind of education no co-ed can offer and no textbook could teach.
The keynote title.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I know you saw this one, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah, this one is like, Elric and I have talked about it a little bit on, maybe it was a Patreon episode. I can't remember, but it's a Sybil Danning movie. She like seduces this high school, she's a teacher, I think, and she seduces this high school kid to help. I think she's trying to kill her husband or something, and but it goes just to these super bizarre places and is very perverse and strange, and I was so thoroughly entertained by it, I can't even say. I'm assuming you were similarly entertained, at least.
Oh my gosh, I love it. This is one of those movies that I'm constantly trying to get people to watch because it is... where it starts and where it ends are two such totally different places. And it is, you know, peak Sybil Danning. She's amazing in it. And
it's one of my favorites of hers. I can't think of too many that I like more.
Yeah.
She's just so good in it.
And did you get a chance to watch any of the special features?
I can't remember now if I did. I don't think so. Maybe. Is there an interview with her on it?
There is. And it's amazing.
I don't think I saw it because I would have a similar impression to you, I'm quite sure, if I had.
She talks about how her co-star, Eric Brown, right?
Okay, yeah. That sounds right.
Who is famous from Private Lessons, you know, in a very similar type of role. Just they didn't really get along, and he wasn't really into her, and she couldn't understand why. And so she said their like love scenes had no heat, and she was doing whatever she could to try to like get him into it, and he wasn't having it. And I'm just so fascinated by that idea.
That is amazing. I gotta watch that interview. She's something else. That story that Elric told on the other show about her showing up on Inside Horror with the sunglasses on and then turning into a sunglass. I was just like, wow, that woman is a character.
Wow. I hope that you won't be wreaking vengeance upon us. I don't know. You look like you're a little bit...
Lady Terminator.
Yeah, what's up with that? Who made these fantastic glasses for you?
You like these specs, Stacy.
I do like them.
I know. You are very fashionable yourself.
I was eyeing them earlier, so to speak.
I knew you would recognize them. And I must say, I love them myself, and I'm now the spokesperson for them. These are Dimitri Samal. He is the designer. He not only designs glasses, but other things also. And you can buy them at www.samaldesign.com. That's S-A-M-A-L design.com. But I love them because I just love the pixelated design of them, which is so special. And they're very wonderful to wear. They're all handmade. So they're quite expensive, probably about 300 euros, the pair that I'm wearing right now. But they'd look lovely on you. And I will put in a good word for you.
Okay.
I must be in the wrong show. The fashion show.
Yeah.
And she definitely brings it in her movies. So
yeah.
I don't know. Let's see here. Just a couple more real quick. There's something called Scorchy from 1976.
Meet Scorchy. Also known as federal undercover agent Jackie Parker.
Please, don't anybody move a muscle!
Connie Stevens is Scorchy, the hottest cop on the force.
I'll have Steve and the boys cover your pad.
Look, do me a favor. Will you tell those guys to keep their distance? I'm going to have to work this young man over, and I don't want a lot of eyes on me.
She makes fast friends.
A dope trafficker would do anything to push his product, Frank. I don't see why any cop wouldn't do the same.
And deadly enemies.
This is a Connie Stevens movie. Connie Stevens, I think, was known more for some... She wasn't a beach movie person. What was her deal? She did... Damn it. She's in Grease too, but like she was in... I feel like she was in some like beach movie adjacent type stuff, but maybe it was more TV stuff that... Yeah, I think she did...
I always thought she was known more as like a singer.
Oh, yeah, that's, I think you might be right about that. She was on like Hawaiian Eye and 77 Sunset Strip.
Yeah.
And she was in a movie called Palm Springs Weekend, you know, so it's that kind of 60s, I don't know, that kind of sexy is really tame in comparison to today. And so this movie is like a total departure from that. I mean, I feel like I looked at her filmography and she definitely did some sexier stuff in the 70s, but this one, she plays an undercover narc cop out to bust like a drug smuggling ring in Seattle, and it gets really ridiculous. You know, there's some ridiculous seduction scenes. It's like, I'd almost say it's somewhere between like Mitchell, you know, the Joe Don Baker movie, and like Coffee, and obviously not as entertaining quite as either of those movies, but it's just such a bizarre thing because there's crazy action sequences. William Smith is in the movie. Greg Evigan is in the movie. It has lots of, you know, ridiculous chase scenes and shootouts and has like a really interesting ending that I didn't totally see coming, but I was just thoroughly entertained by it. Just a hoot of a movie, and it totally surprised me. So that was fun. And then lastly, I have one more from Twilight Time, and it's Snake and the Eagle Shadow, the Jackie Chan movie. They put it out with Drunken Master, and I'd never seen Snake and the Eagle Shadow, and it's great. I still have a lot of Jackie Chan to see. I've seen a good amount of his stuff and liked a lot because of, I think, so much of his style comes from silent comedy. And when you watch him, it's this incredible ballet of motion and comedy. And sometimes it doesn't land, but sometimes it's just like the most splendid thing in the world to watch. And this was one of those movies. It was just really a lot of great action and him doing what he does really well. So that is it for my honorables. I don't want to keep you up too late, sir. I do really, really appreciate you coming on, and I loved your list. So thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. It was super fun, and you've given me a bunch more movies to check out, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, no, this was really neat. And if I know you're a busy man with many podcasts, but at some point I may try and hit you up again for another guest spot if you'd be interested.
I would be happy to do it literally anytime.
Oh, you're too sweet, man. That's very nice. Well, thank you, Patrick. Folks, check out Patrick on Twitter at Patrick Bromley, and then F This Movie at F This Movie and FThisMovie.com and their podcast and Corpse Club and Daily Dead. You've got so many irons and so many fires, sir. I don't know how. I consider myself a relatively busy person, but I don't know quite how you do it, I gotta say.
It's driving me to an early grave.
But at least you're spreading movie love.
That's right.
So it's in the name of that. So
that's right.
I can appreciate that. But thank you again, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks everybody for listening. Have a wonderful and Blu-ray filled week, and I will talk to you soon. Bye bye.